This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills.
It's amazing how much can happen in a short period of time.
That's Phil Hudock, the West Virginia Constitution Party's candidate for governor.
In 5 days, I went from on the ballot to off the ballot to back on the ballot.
Hudock and the Constitution Party have been at the center of a court battle over ballot access. He was not a party in the lawsuit. However, the question of whether his name and the names of more than a dozen other candidates will appear on November's ballot came down to a federal judge's decision Thursday. The conflict began when the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals ruled in another election-related lawsuit last week. In that case, former state senator Eric Wells was trying to get on the Kanawha County ballot as an independent running for county clerk. A Kanawha County judge had previously ruled Wells couldn't run as an independent because he is a registered Democrat. That ruling came despite Wells collecting thousands of signatures from voters to have his name included in the November race. Wells appealed to the Supreme Court, where his attorney argued that the case was a ballot access issue.
It's a situation where a group of voters said, this is the candidate that we want, and it's the ballot access under the First and 14th Amendments here in this state that the voters have the right to have on the ballot a candidate that espouses their political thoughts or their social views.
Four of the five justices disagreed, and Wells and nine other candidates in similar situations were removed from the ballot. The Secretary of State's office says that because of specific language in the Supreme Court ruling about filing deadlines, even more candidates had to be struck from the ballot following the ruling.
According to this decision from the Supreme Court, these candidates had to have filed by the last Saturday in January.
That's Secretary of State Natalie Tennant, and this is where it gets more complicated. The Secretary of State's office has interpreted state code for years, decades even, as saying major party candidates have to file to run for office by the last Saturday in January during an election year. Third party candidates and independents, though, they have longer, until the end of July. But the new Supreme Court ruling says all candidates must file their intent to run for office by January, disqualifying everyone who filed in July this year.
They scratched the entire Constitution Party.
Hudock's Constitution Party is not a recognized political party in West Virginia, so, like Wells, he had to collect 7,000 signatures to get his name on the ballot in this year's race for governor. And he did that. After 4 years of work and 10,000 signatures, Hudock turned in his petition at the end of July and was certified as a candidate, he says, about 15 days later. But under the new court ruling, Tennant had to pull his name from the ballot, his and every other candidate who filed in July.
While I've had to follow what the Supreme Court says, it's not my personal feeling. I don't want to decertify a candidate who's gone through the process. But I have to respect the Supreme Court and follow what their ruling is.
That was Tennant on Wednesday, the day before a federal judge heard a new case filed against her office as the result of the removal of the additional candidates. One of the suit's lead plaintiffs is the Constitution Party's candidate for president, Daryl Castle. He argued that, unlike Wells, he was a registered member of the Constitution Party before he filed his intent to run for office in July. Hudock says,
you know, that's a whole different issue. This is apples and oranges.
Federal District Judge Chuck Chambers ruled Thursday that Castle, Hudock, and the other late filers affected by the Supreme Court ruling must be put back on the ballot. The Secretary of State's office says that ruling affects 18 candidates, candidates who were running as registered independents and candidates registered or affiliated with non-recognized parties. Not everyone will regain ballot access, though. A spokesperson for the office says candidates like Wells, who are registered with a major party and running as an independent, will not be reinstated. Although the Secretary of State could appeal the decision to the Fourth Circuit, Tennant's office says she won't. The Secretary issued a statement shortly following the decision that says, quote, I have always fully supported ballot access for independent candidates and respect the wishes of the groups of citizens that support them. I am delighted by the court's ruling, end quote. And Hudock, he's delighted too.
Ready to get back out there and hit the pavement. So I'm back on the ballot, folks. Check me out.
The revised ballots, the ones that include Hudock's name, go out to the counties today. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
20 American veterans turn to suicide every day, according to a new report from the Veterans Administration. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Eric Newhouse spoke with Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly to give some understanding about the struggle this group of veterans face when they return from war.
I noticed in several of the articles the term moral injury, and this is something that's new to me. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Moral injury is a concept that's really arrived in the last 5 or 6 years. It's not recognized by the AMA yet, and it's not part of the official diagnosis of PTSD, but it should be. PTSD is typically a fear factor. It's something that you respond to people trying to kill you, and ultimately, over time, that hyperarousal becomes a permanent factor. It's with you even when you come back from the combat zone. But the moral injury factor, which I like to call the wounded soul syndrome, is the opposite of it. It's not having someone do something to you, but it's all about what you did to others or what you failed to do for others. And that is unrecognized largely, but it's a very real component. It prevents vets from talking to each other about what they've done. It prevents them from talking to their families about what they've done. They bottle things up, and ultimately they realize that they can't handle that anymore, and they come apart, and they may very well commit suicide. And that's precisely what these women feel.
But it seems like, you know, over and over again we hear about these things, but there's... in this torture that our vets are struggling with even after they come home. But there are a lot of nonprofit organizations and people out there who are trying to raise awareness and trying to help, and it seems like, and trying to put out the message that there is hope. What kind of hope would you say is out there for veterans that might be struggling?
You are right when you say that there are a lot of people who really care and who are trying very hard to help, and that's a wonderful thing. That's a comforting thing. I think that there is hope for vets. I think that, first of all, they need to be able to talk about what they've been through, both the good and the bad. But the problem is that brains that have been traumatized are not susceptible to reason. When you are traumatized, your brain reverts to the amygdala, the limbic fight-or-flight syndrome. And so reason doesn't really have anything to do with how you perceive your situation or how you hope to get out of it. When the prefrontal cortex shuts down, your rational brain shuts down, an area called the Broca's area also shuts down. That area is responsible for speech. And when you lose that ability to speak about what you've been through, you can't process it either. And so that memory remains alive. It remains as though that happened to you just instants ago. And every time you revisit that, it's as though you're living it again for the first time. One of the ways that some people have found to get past that inability to speak about what they have been through is by writing. Writing in that way is hugely therapeutic because it allows you to talk about what you have been through, finally. And once you've done that, you can process it and put it back behind you.
That's the story that you talked about in your blog, and the entries called One Soldier's Struggle with Torture, Trauma, and Moral Injury.
Yeah. I think the one thing that's important to me is that soldiers need to know that they have to talk about what they've been through. They have to make atonement for what they've done. And in some cases, you know, that can be something like building schools or helping kids or community service, ways that they can give back to the world what they took away from it. after they've made atonement, they have to be able to forgive themselves, and they have to learn to play and build good memories that will replace the bad ones. I think if they can do that, they can recover.
Eric Newhouse, author of the blog Invisible Wounds, thank you so much for your time.
Jessica, thank you. It's been a privilege and a pleasure.
You can hear more of this conversation on the next episode of Inside Appalachia, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Sunday morning at 7 and Sunday evening at 6. This show is also available on iTunes or at wvpublic.org. If you or someone you know is in crisis, you can call the VA Crisis Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. Under the direction of Dobro master Jerry Douglas, the Earls of Leicester perfectly conjure the sounds of bluegrass legends Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and in the process have created one of music's great band name puns. Recreating the spirit of bluegrass giants is serious business, though, and it paid off when the group took home a 2015 Grammy for its efforts. Here they are with Salty Dog Blues, the Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
I stand on the corner with a low-down blues grip, the gold in the bottom of the shoe.
Honey, let me be your salty dog. Let me be your salty dog, or I won't be your man at all. Honey, let me be your salty dog.
Sal, I know you run down stocking in a wet shoe.
Honey, let me be your salty dog. Let me be your salty dog. Or I won't be your man at all. Honey, let me be your salty dog.
Down in the wildwood, sitting on a log, playing on the trigger, now I'm cold.
Honey, let me be your salty dog. Let me be your salty dog, or I won't be your man at all. Honey, let me be your salty dog.
Trigger and the gun said go, shot fell over in Mexico.
Honey, let me be your salty dog. Let me be your salty dog, or I won't be your man at all. Honey, let me be your salty dog. Let me be your salty dog, or I won't be your man at all. Honey, let me be your salty dog.
The Earls of Leicester with Salty Dog Blues. The band appears on this week's all-new broadcast of Mountain Stage with Larry Gross, alongside Lara Lynn, Cheryl Wheeler, Rob Ikes, and Trey Hensley, and Nora Jane Struthers. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, Marshall University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the help from Glennis Board, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Ann Lee, Liz McCormick, Roxy Todd, Jesse Wright, and Beth Voorhees. Our producer is Ashton Mara. I'm Teresa Wills.